Welcome, everybody, to this edition of the Don Cherry's Grapevine Podcast. I'm here with Cindy, Dad, I'm Tim, and Dell's at the controls, and Dad, Tampa Bay, Stanley Cup winners.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I've said it 100 times, and I'm going to say it again. They got tougher. The year before, they got beat out 4 straight. They sat down and said, let's take a look at Washington. Let's take a look at Boston in the finals. Boston had had the most fights in the... I hear people, oh, Harry has fight. Well, Boston had the most fights in the whole league that year. And we had Tom Johnson and Ovechkin. The whole bunch of them, they
well, yeah, you were saying the 1 year Washington won, they were really tough.
They were tough. They had, remember Tom Wilson running, Tom Wilson running around banging and smashing, and he was the guy.
And then last year, Boston led the league in fights, and St. Louis was tough.
St. Louis was tough, and I remember, like, and I'll mention it again, they were a little funny. Eh? They were playing a little funny against Boston. And Krug got hit in the corner. Remember Krug got hit in the corner?
Yep.
And he lost his helmet, and he was mad. He run, and he hit that kid. There was a kid named Thomas. And St. Louis said, ha, this is the way you want to play, eh? And Berube had them run after that. Well, anyhow, it was tough.
Yep.
Washington, the reason Tampa won was because they had changed their philosophy. I remember Cooper saying, we get a team 3-0. We try to beat them 9-0. We played a tough. They were a tough team. And if you saw the finals this year, they were a tough team. That's why they won. And I see the Leafs are doing really well this year to get in the finals. They signed a Swede.
Yeah, another small defenseman.
Oh, Dad, I remember a long time ago when Tampa was just debating or whether they could get a franchise in Tampa, and there was a couple other teams or cities that wanted a franchise, and you were behind or you were involved in one of those debates, weren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I was with Jerry Patterson, and Tim Hortons. Tim Hortons was involved in too. Ron Joyce was one of the guys behind it. It was in Hamilton, and they had a beautiful, they had Cops Coliseum. They had a beautiful arena. It still is a beautiful arena. They were going to make the boxes bigger, and we're all set to go.
And they had a lot of the season ticket holders sales. Oh. So the minimum amount, they had them all sold out.
Well, I think they sold out in 10 seconds. Somebody could touch something. They had the whole deal was sold. We were all set. And Phil Esposito was with Tampa. And a guy, I forget his first name, was Firestone, was with Ottawa. I forget his first name. Anyhow, Firestone. So we were all set. At 12 o'clock, and I went to bed, and Jerry said, we're all set. We're all set to go and everything like that. But they had to have the meeting the next day. And Phil walked in with Tampa and said, we've got a building. We're ready to go, and we're going to get a building, and we've got the money, and He never had anything. He never had a building. He never had anything. He had no money at all. And he said, we got it, and we're ready to go. So the Ottawa guy walked in and said, yeah, we got a building too. No building. We're all set to go. We're going to build that building, and we're going to get, and we're ready to go. So I hate to say it, but the head of Tim Hortons walked in and said, well, can we talk? As soon as he said, can we talk? We lost the franchise. The NHL didn't want to hear it. We didn't talk. Can we give a little? Listen, once you say you don't have, and we had the money. We had the check and everything ready to go. And Hamilton would have been a great franchise. We weren't worried about Buffalo. We weren't worried about anybody.
Do you think the NHL would have been worried about the Buffalo franchise?
Well, they didn't really want didn't want a Canadian team. That, you know, they wanted Tampa. They really did want Tampa. And Phil...
But I remember Jerry saying that they were told that night that they had...
We had the franchise.
That the NHL said, Hamilton has the franchise. We're going to have a 10 o'clock press conference and announce it. And then Jerry said, I got a call at 8 o'clock in the morning, so we got to talk. He says, I knew that wasn't good news. And they said, nope, Ottawa's getting it.
Ottawa's getting it, and Tampa's
in
getting
Tampa.
It. And the reason they got it was because they had no billing, they had no money, they had anything, but they said they were positive. And when we walked in, I wasn't there, but when they walked in, so can we talk? And we had the money. We had the building. We were ready to go. And that's how Tampa got in. And the first couple of years...
And Hamilton still doesn't have a team.
No, I'm afraid
but they,
not.
But they, and the one thing with Hamilton, like they have the Bulldogs there, the junior A team. The junior A team.
And they had
the American, and they drew well. They drew well for the American League. They really drew well for junior hockey.
Listen, believe me, the people that can't get tickets in Toronto would all be lined up in Hamilton. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the rivalry of Toronto and Hamilton?
Oh, that would be great. And that Cops Coliseum is a beautiful rink.
And it was it is a beautiful arena.
It is, yeah.
And they were going to make bigger boxes. And I remember they had Team Canada down there. They were lined up the Highway 8 they were lined up.
Well, we know Hamilton well because that was the first bar we had in Hamilton,
yeah,
right?
I don't know. I don't think we had a bar then. No. Nope. But anyhow, I'll tell you, boy, that would have been a great franchise. And Tampa, this year, and as I said, they got tough. They knew what was going on. And if you don't get tough, you don't win in the playoffs. And you know, watching Tampa and Dallas play, I know the ratings weren't too good, but it was pretty good hockey. You have to admire the players this year. They're in that bubble, and they didn't go out. They didn't bring people in. And nobody got that virus. And you really have to admire the players. And that's a good Canadian. Most of them are Canadian. But that's the way they have to do it. And I don't think GTHL,
Well, we're talking about now, you know, everybody's looking for what's next year. Like in Toronto, the Greater Toronto Hockey League, they have like 40,000 kids. And they're not doing anything until at least January 1st. And, you know, the people are talking about...
And no people at the buildings.
Yeah, well, they don't. They're not. That's what they're talking about now. Is no parents in the buildings, but they don't even want them to practice now. Like because before they were kind of letting them practice and get the teams ready and stuff, but nothing like that. And like everybody's, you know, they're saying what happens in the American Hockey League if the American Hockey
and
League,
junior hockey
if you can't have fans in the stands and hockey, you're not going to make money. You're not going to go. The Quebec League's having some exhibition games, but I don't know if they have fans in the stands.
No, I don't think they do. And you know, in junior hockey, if you don't, and the American Hockey League and the National Hockey League, but in junior hockey especially, if you don't have fans, they can't survive because most of them lose money anyhow.
You would know that, eh, Dad?
I had the Mississauga Ice Dogs. It almost cost, except for the travel. It for the skates and for that, if you have two pair of skates, the sticks and the whole deal, it almost costs as much to run a junior hockey as it does a national hockey league, except for travel. And if you don't have fans, you have to have fans. Like the other, like football and basketball, they get money from television and they can survive, but you can't survive in hockey without fans.
Yeah, I know, like they were just, they said that the NFL, they'll make money this year, even though there's no fans.
Well, they have the big contract.
Because of the big TV contract. So, well, hopefully things will get straightened out. But you know, everybody's worrying about, you know, next year's draft, you know, the junior draft, because the kids aren't going to be playing, so you're not going to be able to see the kids. And
well, it's the NHL. They're I think it's December 1st, but they said that's not cement that you can... Even later than that, so it's a tough deal.
Yep. Dad, I want to mention our sponsor, Spreads.ca. It's owned by the Abenaki Council of Willanac First Nations, and they're an online casino and sportsbook. And if you sign up today and use the promo code GRAPES, they'll match your deposit 100%. So if you put $25 down, they'll give you $25. And you get 15 free spins on a kind of a slot machine, and if you get, I think, three of your jackets, you can win some big dough, and they get a $25, and if you're going to bet $25 on the sports bet, they'll give you $25 free to bet on it. So,
all right. Sounds
so,
good.
Yeah, kind of sports, though, but I think the only sport I'm going to be betting on and watching is the Yankee-Tampa Bay baseball. I just want, you know, we're talking a little bit about baseball. How about the Astros? Wouldn't that be something if they came back and they won again?
They got a bee in their bonnet, as they say. Boy, they got hit more this year from that fiasco they had. And you were saying that one of the players said they don't blame the They don't blame the players, or they don't. They blame the players.
Yeah. That's what I was reading an article, and I think it was that the pitcher. I keep forgetting his name that got thrown.
Kelly.
He says, I don't blame the manager. He says, I don't blame the league. He goes, I blame the players for cheating. He says, at the end of the day, it's the players that were cheating.
Remember the guy hit the home run? What was the second?
Yeah.
And he come running in, and he touched the front of his T-shirt. Don't pull the T-shirt off because you'll see the mic on. And he hit a home run. I mean, I would have never, listen, Scotty Bowman, when we were in playing hockey, he took it to the limit, but he would never cheat. I remember he got up at the early in the morning. He heard about the referees going down at 8 o'clock skating before a game. I don't know why they had, but they went down skating and he went down and berated them, as they say. I remember in the paper, berate. I said, what the hell does berate mean? So anyhow, he was saying, you won't call penalties on Boston. You won't call penalties on Boston. And, you know, giving them a hard time. And then, believe it, he never cheated. He would never cheat. But then he called the press in. Look at the penalties that Boston should have had. He had a video. I mean, he did everything, but he would never do that, and I would never do that. That was that was a little too much.
A little too much. But, you know, they were below 500. They snuck into the playoffs. And they swept, and you never know. Like as you say, they got a bee in their bonnet.
I was
really disappointed with Toronto, though. It wasn't even close.
Wasn't even close. 8-2. Well, the first game was close.
Yeah.
But so, that guy they found from South Korea, boy, he get bombed the second game. 8-2. He was supposed to be the ace. Anyhow, I liked Toronto. After Boston, I like Toronto.
Yeah, so I'm going on to the spreads, and I'm a Boston Red Sox fan, so I got to bet against the Yankees. So I'm going to bet Tampa because I can't.
Oh yeah,
I don't like the Yankees if you're a Red Sox fan. So Dad, we were talking about we were taking some questions from the people. So we're going to do a couple of questions here that people have did on your Twitter and on Rock'em Sock'em Facebook page. So we'll do the first one's from Rick O'Donnell. It says, Don, I'd like to hear your comments on Bill, Mr. Oiler Hunter, and not being elected to the Hall of Fame. In 1999, numerous Hall of Fame people made an application for his entry as a founder of the WHA and the Edmonton Oilers.
Can you imagine? I mean, here's a guy, his whole life was hockey. I knew him personally. I met him, when I first met him, I met him at a banquet. And I remember he come up to me and he give me a few hints and stuff like that. But here's a guy he formed the Edmonton Oilers, believe it or not, and the WHA, and then they went into the National Hockey League. And we almost had St. Louis move to Regina, and I was going to be the coach.
That's what I remember. That was his big push, was trying to get, now that you remember that, was trying to get a team in Regina.
Yeah. Oh, and he was in hockey before that. His whole life was hockey. That's all he did. And he said, come on out. So we went out, saw the arena beautifully. And I said, well, it's too small. And he said, we're going to put seats all in the end there. And he was going to have about 16,000 people be through. And I said, well, gee, that's it. You know, not. He says, the people in the West, he says, they think nothing of driving 200, 100 miles to see a game. And he says, that's the way it is out here. And but absolutely ridiculous that he's not in the Hall of Fame. His whole life was hockey. I mean, it won't be like Pat Burns. Remember when Pat Burns, he wanted to get in the coach when he was alive. They could have voted him in, and he died that summer, and they put him in the next year when he was dead. I guess his coaching improved over the anyhow. Well, if he's not in, how about Pat Verbeek? Pat Verbeek. I mean, this is ridiculous. 522 goals, and he's not in. You're going to say he's only a goal scorer. He had 541 assists.
Man, well, for builders, just to say, like, and they always say, well, you know, the Hall of Fame's not for just the NHL. Well, you said Bill Hunter was really big in getting the WHA going.
WHA, Edmonton Oilers, and that's how they are in there now. I mean, I mean, Ricky Milton. How about Ricky Milton? 500 goals, and he's not in either. And the guy that I thought should have been in that was Dale Hunter. Dale Hunter. I mean, I think he paid. How many games he played? But I asked him. I said to him one time, I said, how come you're not in the Hall of Fame? And he answered it very good. He said, they're not my type of people. Or he's not one of them.
Yeah, he's not their type of people.
Yeah. And he played 19 years in the league. He was an all-star. I think he had 3,500 minutes in penalties. And remember the time he hit the Pierre Turgeon?
I think that's the thing that kept him out of the Hall of Fame right there.
They were getting beat. Washington was really getting beaten by the Islanders, I think it was.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And when you score the sixth goal, you know.
I think it was an open net you scored.
He put a stick in the air and dancing around. And out of the corner, on the left-hand side of the TV, I saw Dale going over. I said, oh, no. And I said to myself, oh, no, Dale, don't. And he cross-checked him, and that was the end. I think Gary Bettman gave him 20 games. It's the only time he's there. 20 games for the next year. And I said, Turgeon has not hurt that. If they get by the next round, he'll play. By golly, he did. And Pierre Turgeon did. And he's playing. And Dale Hunter's there. Anyhow, Dale, he never made the Hall of Fame. So what can you say? But, Bill Hunter lived his whole life in hockey.
Yeah, he's one of those guys behind the scenes that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, absolutely.
From Susan P., if you could, would you go back to the one referee system?
You know, the funny thing is, people talk about that all the time. And, you know, off the record, they say, you know, there should be one referee. But you know why I like the one referee is that it has a feel for the game. He has a feel for the game. And Tim and I, you and I go, and believe it or not, the GTHL all season has one referee, and you can see that he has a feel for the game. And then when they come to the playoffs, they have two. The reason, you know, they know when to give a penalty. Now, for instance, if you have two referees and you have one referee giving them a lot of penalties and the other referee's given no penalties, they look at the end of the game. And I remember Red Story. He was one of the best referees when I first started out. And you were on a borderline penalty with a high stick or something. He'd come up behind you and say, okay, number two, one more and you're gone. And, you know, like, so he had a feel for the game. And when you get into the playoffs with one referee, you knew what to do. Now, for instance, you'd say the referees, how can they control a game? I'll tell you how they can control a game. If we get up 5-1 or 4-1 or something like that, then you know you get three or four penalties. You get three or four penalties in a row. And one time we got four penalties, and I said to Wes McCauley, I said, Wes, that's enough. He says, yeah, you know.
No,
he just
John McCauley.
Hmm?
John McCauley.
Oh, I am. I call him. I don't know. I call. And now I'm calling John McCauley Wes, and I'm calling John Wes. And that's his son, Wes McCauley, that's coaching the – puts on a pretty good show, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, he's one of the more colorful referees.
Yeah, I like when he calls a penalty or something like that. He's pretty good. Anyhow, I remember John McCauley coming over to me in the playoffs, and he did not want to call a penalty in the playoffs because that's the way the referees used to be one. And he said, don't embarrass me. And I knew exactly what he meant was, don't pull a guy down and going for a goal. Don't have an automatic penalty in a row right in front of him, and he call it. So yeah, I like the one referee. I know the reason that they had two referees is they felt one of them would miss a guy from behind. But
so now two of them miss a guy from behind.
But here we talked about this last week. The guy 60 feet away called a penalty on Ben. And the guy standing right next to him didn't call a penalty. I don't understand. I don't understand their thinking anyhow. And so the question from Susan P., do I believe in one referee? Most people believe in the one referee. They won't say it because they just won't say it. I'll say it. I believe in one referee.
Well, Dad, we'll get to some more questions next week.
Yeah.
And Cindy, you got some updates on Coach's Closet.
Yes, this past Tuesday. Okay, we wrapped it up, Dad. And boy, there was a lot of great bids out there. And we raised $30,000 for Don Cherry's Pet Rescue Foundation.
Isn't that something?
You know, I mean, and it'll all be distributed. Yesterday, that's what I did yesterday, too. I wrote around four or five checks to rescues across Canada.
Good for you.
And, you know, John at the Coop, he's wrapping everything up for you, signing the jackets and pictures and things like that. So anyway, want to thank everyone out there for taking an interest, right?
In this day and age, with the virus or whatever you want to call it, and you know everything shut down, I want to thank the guys and the gals, whoever it was that bought that, give the money, and 100% goes to the 100%. I just tell you, every cent goes to the pets and the dogs and the cats and everybody. We don't keep a penny of it, and you did a lot of hard work, you and John the Coop, and terrific, and. I'm so happy. I want everybody to know that 100% goes to the foundation.
That's right. That's right. But thanks to you, Dad, for cleaning out. Well, you said you donated.
I don't clean it out. No. I love my jackets.
You love your jackets.
I go in my cedar closet, and that's where I keep my beer. Right?
Is it hard to give up some of those jackets?
It is.
It is?
I keep thinking I'm going to make a comeback.
You're like a lot of, will I ever wear this again?
Well, everybody's saying we should do this on video. And because everybody says, we miss your jackets. We want to do the podcast on a video.
Oh, I don't know how to do that. But, yeah. some of them, they were great jackets. And I take them down and if they weren't right, I'd give John Heck. And they'd have to, don't forget, we give my shirts away
and
my
ties.
And my cufflinks.
Your cufflinks right out of your jewelry box. And you know what really went for big money was the Rough Riders jacket. Remember they did that custom-made jacket for you?
Yeah.
And that went for...
I got a Bruin jacket the next time.
Oh, that would be... The Bruins made that for you? How did that go?
I don't know how I got that.
Yeah.
Deborah down at the Coach's Corner gave it to me.
Did you read in the paper today they were talking about in Ontario license plates that the vanity plates that they wouldn't... allow, and one was Hate Bruins.
Oh.
Yeah, I
hate
Bruins.
H-8 Bruins, and they wouldn't let it.
must have been a Bruin fan that was in the license.
Yeah, really.
I got my truck. It's got Toronto Maple Leafs on it, and beautiful Maple Leaf. I don't think they do that anymore.
A license plate holder. This was a vanity plate.
No, the license plates, they used to have places you could get Leafs and...
Yeah, you used to be able to get Leafs in that.
I don't think you can do that.
I don't think you can do that anymore. I got the last one, and I got it on my truck, and I don't know.
Well, speaking of Bruins, Dad, we have some very sad news. One of your favorites, Bobby Miller.
I can't believe... You know, when I got the email from Karen and the Bruins, and... You know, he was the youngest guy.
64 years old and passed away this past weekend.
And we saw him when I was down there for the get together. He just looked like a million bucks. His hair was just a little gray. He looked like a movie star. I don't know what he died of or anything. It was sad. Yeah. I mean, I have to tell you, boy. I have to tell you, the first game. He's from Billerica, Mass. The reason I think I liked him, he had a Boston accent. Yeah, Boston Garden, and anyhow, he was. It was the first game. Now think about this. I want you to think about this. This is really something. Mike Milbury was the other guy, and I liked Mike, but Mike was pretty sharp. Eh? And Mike was a little older, I guess, or something. But he was pretty sharp. But anyhow, he was, Bobby was always. Every coach has sort of a whipping boy. Not a whipping boy, but you really like the guy, and you're always giving him a hard time. So, in Billerica, they're all excited in Mass. It's his first game. And we went to, we went to the island. I never thought of it, eh? And he's all excited, and he's on the bench, and all his parents and everybody's watching and everything. And I look out in the center, and I see the referee. I think it was John McCauley again. We're talking about John McCauley a lot. And I see him looking at the lineup, and I said, this is not good, the lineup. And I kind of looked down at Frosty Forstall, who was the assistant general manager, or he was the assistant equipment manager, or I guess assistant
trainer. He was assistant
trainer. Yeah, assistant trainer, equipment manager, they call it now. So anyhow, I looked down, and he doesn't look too happy, and I knew something was wrong. So John McCauley comes over and he says, Don, we got a problem. And I says, what's the problem? He says, you put Forbes down instead of Bobby Miller.
See, and both were 14.
Number 14. And what happened was, Frosty was so used to putting down Forbes, Davey Forbes, and I must have talked about him sometime, that he put down Forbes instead of Miller. So I said, well, what am I going to do, John? And he says, look, I'll go over to the penalty box and I'll talk to them, and the players will all come around me and everything. And he said, you get Miller off the bench. I said, holy smokes. So John goes over to the penalty box, and I said, Bobby, go to the dressing room. Well, what for, Grapes? What for? What did I do wrong? No, go to the dressing room. And he didn't want to go because he was so excited to play the game. And holy smokes. They finally, and the two TV guys said, we don't understand why. And then they, you know, said, and I looked down at Frosty, and Frosty had a towel over his head.
So did you still let him fill out your lineup sheet?
Oh, yeah. I never made a mistake after that. I never said anything. I took the blame again, as usual. But he that was the very first game he was supposed to play, and everybody in Massachusetts waiting to see the guy from Billerica. Now, I had a hard time getting him on the club. Now, we had a OHL, our number first draft choices, and he won the scoring title, and Bobby was number three, I think.
He was a fourth round pick.
Fourth round pick?
Yeah.
I knew he was around here. Now, let me describe why I would not want the number one scoring in the OHL, and I think he was the MVP. Anyhow, I had John Rattel, who won the scoring champions for us. I had Greg Shepherd, who was at 20 goals, and I had Peter McNabb, who got 43 goals. Now, I had the top three centermen I had were, I did not, what I wanted was a guy that would be happy to be in the fourth spot. Now, if I picked the number one guy, the scoring title, he'd want to play on one of the other lines. And Bobby Miller, I knew, would be happy to be on the fourth line and kill penalties, and he was happy. And he would be out there when the referee would have his hand in the air for a penalty. Before he put his hand down, Bobby would out there wait. So that's why we didn't, and I know Harry was very upset, and I had to work. I don't know, I had to, and when we had exhibition games, I had to work at keeping him on the team. And he kept on the team, and he was a great little guy. Now, he was the last guy. We had 11 20-goal scorers, and he was the last guy. And I must tell you about how...
And that was his rookie year, too.
That was his rookie year.
Rookie year, a fourth-line center in the rookie
who kills
year,
penalties.
Kills penalties, got 20
goals.
But
we
goals,
worked at it, I have to
20
tell.
Goals, yep.
And when we get up a couple of goals, he'd play all the power plays, anyway, because we wanted to set a record that will never be broken. So anyhow, we're in Toronto. And we're up by one goal, and I'm hurrying this through, and it's near the end of the game, and Roger Nielsen is coaching Toronto, and he, for some reason, he thinks it's ice. It's not icing. It's an offside. So he pulls the goalie off, and he realizes it's icing. It's a face-off at his own end. And he tried to put the goalie back, and Wally Harris, the referee, I never forget it, said, nope. Go out there. Nope. Keep your goalie off. So we get Greg Shepherd's getting the draw.
So you're having a face-off in their end with no goalie.
No goalie. First time in the history of the game.
Oh, my goodness.
So because, you know, Wally Harris wouldn't let him put the goalie
right
back. So it's a face-off. I can still see it now. Greg Shepherd's left-hand draw. He pulls the puck back to Bobby Schmatz. Bobby Schmatz puts it over to Miller because we wanted him to get the 20 goals. And I remember Borzy Salming was laying across the net, playing net. He was going to block the shot. He goes to goal. He's going to pass the puck. And we're all yelling, shoot, shoot, shoot. So he shoots for 20 goals. And we all jumped on the ice and everybody, we get 20 goals.
Yeah, the Toronto fans are thinking, what the heck's going on?
What's the big deal?
He scores an open net.
net. And we shouldn't. And he was going to pass it, though. And here we had been working on. So anyhow, he got that. And
You know, I just wanted a quick kind of offshoot on that. So that we got 11-20 goal scorers that year, right? And I said to you, who was the biggest plus minus on our club at the time? And we were just talking about him.
And I mentioned a couple of guys, and I couldn't think of it. And from Buck Lake,
Ontario, yep, in Kingston, Ricky Smith was plus 70.
Plus 70.
To give you an Graves was the Ryan Graves was the
this year
was plus 40.
And
Ricky Smith was plus 70. He was always on the Ricky Smith was always on the ice when we got a big goal.
Getting assists.
And he got an assist or whatever. But I just couldn't get over it.
We'll
have to talk about Ricky Smith one time.
Ricky Smith, we must. From Buck Lake, I remember he went fishing one time and with his dad and his mom, and he used to go out on Buck Lake and go fishing and everything like that. So anyhow, he's plus 70.
Plus 70, yep.
And the guy that won the plus.
This year was plus 40.
I remember you came home one day and you were talking, you were mumbling about something about a tanner. What was that about?
What happened was we were on the plane and we had a bye. We had 3 or 4 days off. We were first place club and we had a bye. So he used to love to fish, and everybody around Boston loved to fish, go out in the ocean and fish all the time. Bluefish, I think they used
to. That's right. He was a big blue fisherman.
Yeah, they bluefish. I used to think the fish were blue. But anyhow, yeah, you and Bobby, you must tell that story about you and Bobby went out fish one time.
Yeah, well, that was kind of a long story. We'll tell that.
Yeah. One. So anyhow, he's got a great tan. If you notice the players in the playoffs this year, and Tampa and Dallas, they all look white. They look almost translucent.
Translucent.
Yeah. And you can see the veins and everything. They all
peaked
look
in the old
they all
look peaked.
Sick. They all look sick. And you're supposed to look, that's the way it's supposed to be in the playoffs. You're supposed to look sick all the time. So here we are, we're all looking sick and white and everything like that. And we go back and he's got a tan. So Schmatzy come up and he says, take a look at Miller. He whispered, take a look at Miller. So I go back to Miller and I said, what's going on here? And he said, well, what grapes? And I said, look at the rest of us. I said, we look sick and you got a tan. He said, well, I was fishing in those 4 days. I said, I give him heck. He said, well, what am I going to do it? What am I going to do about it? And I said, get rid of it.
Well, you were saying the happiest guy on the team when Bobby Miller made the thing was Peter McNabb, because you used to not really a whipping boy.
No, I used to give them heck all the time, and they knew I was rest of the players knew I was kidding. And Peter McNabb, I used to do it all the time.
But
I
remember, but then when Bobby Miller came, then you gave it to Bobby.
Yeah, he switched over, and you know, in college, they I think they do it now. And the first time I saw it was in the prospect game when a coach gives a talk. At the end of it, and I think they do it in the National Hockey League. There's a lot of college guys in the National Hockey League now. They clap. And you're thinking, oh, you know, I did a pretty good clap. And what happened was, I give a little talk before a game and something like that or something. And he clapped.
The
only guy that clapped, and everybody looking at it. Milbury was the other American on the club. He was sharp enough to know.
He knew better.
Yeah,
tell the story when Bobby Miller, when his first time he was playing against Montreal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're sitting in the dressing room. Now, you got to remember, Montreal had lost 8 games all year. They lost 1 game at home. They could win any time they wanted. And I guess in college hockey, they always holler, come on, guys. We beaten better clubs than this. So I said, oh, yeah. So I went to him, what club have we played that you've ever played that's been better than this club? And he was a great guy. I really.
Do you know he played for Brian Kilray? He played 5 games for Ottawa.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He played 5 games for Ottawa. I think after he finished his college career, Ottawa owned his rights, and he came up and played 5 games, got 10 points in 5 games with Brian.
Oh, I thought he got 10 points in 5
10
games.
10 points, 5 goals,
what
5.
What was he doing up there?
I think what happened was that Ottawa owned his rights. And he finished his college career. I forget. I think he played University of New Hampshire, I think. And then, so he was done. So I guess Brian called him up, and he came up and played 5 games.
Brian's pretty sharp. He knew the players. But anyhow, Bobby Miller passed away, and I can't believe it. I tell the stories, and I still think, and I saw him when he was there when they Boston Bruins put on a pretty good show with the 11-20 goal scores, and he was there, and I can still see him now. He's here. He had all his hair. He had curly hair, and he was going to look like a movie star. And
I was going to say a couple. I remember him saying that I read an article that he said he never had a fight in his life, but he said when he went to the Bruins, he says we stuck up for each other, and he says and I think one of his first fights was against Doug Riseborough, and then you know who else he fought? He fought Wolf Paymont.
Holy, and he survived.
He survived. Yeah.
He didn't know Wolf, or he wouldn't have.
Yeah. And he was, because he was one of the first college, like, he was one of the first college.
Milbury was the other guy.
Yeah, Milbury, but he was one of the first
college. Just think, Dad, you had two college guys on your team as, you know, big bad Bruins, and you're sort of ahead of your time when you think about it, that you had two college guys like that on your team.
I think of that, and Americans, too. The rest of the guys were Canadians. And
how progressive of you. Yeah.
Well, I remember he was a great skater. And
boy, he could really skate.
And when I would, you know, I was, you know, 11 or 12 at the time, and, you know, myself and some of the other kids, he'd always stay after, and he'd fool around with us and play hockey with us after practice. And
well, he was almost as young as you.
Yeah, he was. And he was a really great guy.
He was a good guy, and I still can't believe he's gone. And I just got the news, and hard to believe.